This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, and welcome to another Lefty Pinkos, Kath and Brian with you.
Too right.
Well, tonight's show is a really special one.
It is. We've got a fantastic guest all the way from Sydney who happens to be in town here for the Next Wave Festival.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Next Wave started last week, and our guest tonight is Tony Albert, an artist, an amazing contemporary artist who has got work all over the place.
He's travelled everywhere.
He's travelled in Australia, but also done some amazing stuff internationally. We'll be chatting to him over the next hour here on Lefty Pinkos, and I guess, yeah, he's an Aboriginal guy too. He's a queer artist. He's Aboriginal. He's queer.
He's a contemporary artist.
And he's an artist, yeah. Because we'll talk about, I guess, how he defines himself and where he sits in the art world as somebody that identifies as Aboriginal, as queer, and as simply brilliant when it comes to his output.
And we don't often have artists on the show, particularly visual artists. And tonight, Tony's his background, the sort of works that he produced, the sort of places he gets exhibited are really phenomenal. And he's only in his early 30s. And so we're having him on tonight because we think he's really going to encourage some people out there to kind of get cracking on it, you know, that art can be a career for you. So that's all coming up in the show.
Hi, this is Kathy Freeman and you're listening to Australia's gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're with Lefty Pinkos here with Kath and Brian, and we have in the studio with us tonight the amazing Tony Albert, who is an artist from far north Queensland. He's based in Sydney at the moment. But I just want to ask, how do you describe yourself, Tony?
How do I describe myself? As me? As a contemporary artist, I think. I'd prefer to be a contemporary artist and an Aboriginal person rather than defining my practice as being Aboriginal. My family comes from far north Queensland, so I'm associated with the Gitomei, Yidinji and Kukulyalanji people.
Yep.
But in the context of my work, I guess even on museum walls, I'd like to just have my name associated with my work rather than my language groups because, I do kind of some work that is either confronting or has very strong political elements to it. Say, the piece at the NGA, you know, says, pay attention, motherfuckers. And, I just don't feel right having my language name associated with that. It's not a projection of who we are as a people. It's a statement, that I'm using in a contemporary art practice. So I tend to look at my work within that realm rather than specifying it to being something that is just Aboriginal.
Yeah. And sexuality. We're with Joy, Australia's only full-time gay and lesbian radio station. What's your sexuality, Tony? How do you describe that?
Okay. I think just gay. I know I have, great friends that, debate or talk very seriously about terms that define us and prefer the word queer. But it's interesting that I guess my life, as an artist and being an Aboriginal person, that's become a lot more about my identification of who I am. So those kind of issues associated with sexuality haven't really entered my work or something that I don't comment on knowingly. I think it is there, and I've had great opportunities to be invited specifically to be involved with things like Mardi Gras or curated shows around the idea of sexuality, which I feel very honored to have been able to participate in. But being able to make a work around that forum, I find really interesting as well. I'm kind of an artist who doesn't mind when I get a challenge to do something that I wouldn't normally be doing. And sexuality is one of those things that does constantly come up. And I have had the opportunity to work around those issues.
Can I ask you a bit about your background? Because you've studied at Griffith Uni. It wasn't fine arts, was it? It was
a Bachelor of Visual Art majoring in Contemporary Australian Indigenous Art, which is a completely unique course at Griffith University and the only accredited university art course for only Aboriginal people. So it's a very, very interesting.
And obviously you had an end vision of where you wanted to head. Are you where you wanted to head when you were a young thing?
Absolutely. I feel, you know, very honoured to be just an artist. I sustain my living off through, you know, going to the studio every day and just working on my own practice. I spent 8 years with the Queensland Art Gallery and through the transition to the Gallery of Modern Art. So I've had a great insight into institutional way of working. But when I had started off, I had, you know, dreamed that I could just, you know, be making my own work every day. And that's... you know, now my vision or ideas come into more things like how philanthropically I can either help other artists or work with children, and my dreams are slowly changing. But where I'm at the moment, I definitely think is where I foreseen or wished I could have been. Yeah.
Can I ask you a bit about your family? Because a lot of artists struggle with not being supported by their family. You know, your family goes, oh, why don't you get a real job and all that? Yep. How did you have that, or were they supportive?
Absolutely, no. And I still struggle with my family and my brothers and sisters. Getting them to enter into gallery spaces is a real challenge. Getting them to look or accept my work is very hard, but it's been a very slow process and something that I have really encouraged. And what I also did with my parents, I've been lucky enough to follow artists' careers and encourage them to buy work, which is outside of the realm of you know, my parents' income. But I've really, you know, looked at emerging artists with level of pricing on their work, which I knew was a stretch for my parents, but they could afford it, and push them. And we've kind of followed artists' careers, and by doing that and having ownership and having something on your wall by that artist, they've really grown to love it a lot more. It's been, for me, a really inspiring and a great process to have gone through.
Wow, well done.
In discussing, I guess, your work, you seem to be very gallery orientated. Is that, I guess, is that a fair call? And I mean, do you develop work that just sits within a gallery space, or do you want to sit out? Do you ever want to sit outside that those spaces?
Ultimately, I think yes. My gallery idea, where I orientate myself, I show commercially with Sullivan and Strumpf in Sydney, mm-hmm. and I am in a position, as I said earlier, where I do just work for myself. I have a studio manager which works for me, and I have my own studio, and so there is an element of my work which I do it because I need to survive. And it's when I guess that you get the opportunity to think completely outside of that context and do something that might not be in the framework of those gallery walls, or something more conceptually based which isn't ever going to sell or is not feasible in that context, is something that excites me. So it's a mix of both, and it's drawing you know, that fine line between it of, you know, how do you have a commercial element to your work that, you know, keeps you day-to-day running, mm-hmm. and then being able to do those more adventurous projects which are more a labor of love than having any outcome from it. So, you know, I walk, you know, in those two worlds, and, you know, when I mentor or speak with younger artists, I'm very upfront about, you know, saying those challenges that it exists. And sometimes you do have to do things whilst conceptually they're around your own framework. It might not be the end result you wanted in another way or something like that. Yeah.
You came to prominence in my mind through the Proper Now Collective, and I guess just to give a little bit of a summary, they're a Brisbane-based arts collective of just Indigenous artists. Can you tell us about Proper Now and how you came to be involved with them?
Sure. Proper Now's been running for a little over a decade, which is mm-hmm. incredible for an artist-run kind of initiative. And the premise was that we were basically all friends, and we were challenging, I guess, the position that is ascribed to Aboriginal art. So mm-hmm. we like to say, you know, we're Aboriginal artists that don't make Aboriginal art, or we kind of play around a lot with these ideas of terminology. Mm-hmm. But it was friendship based. It was a mixture of male and female, mixture of genders, mixture of sexualities, of high end artists to more emerging like myself at the time. And Proper Now has been one of the main backers behind my work. They've really pushed for my involvement in things. You know, people like Richard Bell, who, mm-hmm. You know, had to fight for their right to be within institutional shows and have made it easier for artists like myself to come along and be accepted within institutions. But they've been backing me for a long time, and I think that really was a great push early in my career in recognition was through the Proper Now Collective.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Joy 94.9. It's Kath and Brian here chatting to Tony Albert on Lefty Pinkos. We'll be back after these announcements with more Chitty Chats.
The most diverse sound for the most diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
You're with Lefty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9. It's Brian and Kath here, and we're chatting to artist Tony Albert, who joins us in the studio. Tony, before we went on that break, we were talking about Proper Now up in Queensland, and I'm kind of interested in just pulling out, you know, it's an amazing model. I've never seen anything quite like it within Australia, particularly among Indigenous artists, where you've got a collective of people coming together, a great diversity of gender, also a really good diversity of age that seems to be big on creating a space for Aboriginal artists, but also taking on that institution that is art within Australia. Tell us about the things you learn being in with, you know, like, what's her name, the old auntie that's involved with?
Jennifer Hurd.
I need Jennifer, yes. And even Richard, Uncle Richard.
Bell,
like,
yes,
you know, what's it like working with people like that who have paved the way, and how does that fit into a cultural context, do you think?
It is incredible, and it's particular earlier, the premise for Proper Now was we were all working together in the same studio. So we don't actually have a combined practice. Mm-hmm. We just support each other's individual practices. Yep. And show together. So we haven't actually worked collaboratively. Yep. On anything. But when you're all working in that studio, that it's almost like a cyclone of energy.
Yep.
You feed off each other. You come in and you see what Richard or Gordon Hookey or Jennifer are doing, and it makes you want to be better, not pull them down, but push
stand
you
alongside
up.
Them.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And that was, for me, was a real Brisbane thing. People were really surprised when they travelled to Brisbane, and I've had conversations with people in Sydney as well I don't want to be critical and I'll get into trouble, but Brisbane is this place that's like, who are you and what can I do for you? And that was kind of our attitude. And I feel other places are, you know, what are you doing and what are you taking away from me by you being here?
Oh, wow. That's good. That's, yeah. I kind of agree with that.
I mean, okay. I feel sometimes very... there's
put
people
it out there.
Scathing at me. But,
no, Sydney people tend to... Sydney artists tend to keep their cards close to their chest, is how I feel
and,
about
you know,
them.
It's very... Having been in Sydney now for nearly 3 years, it's very expensive. It is very competitive. Mm. And people are there to make it or to do, you know... They have an agenda, and Brisbane, it's not that we didn't have that. It was just much more relaxed, and you kind of embraced outsiders. You wanted to learn more, and that's the way we worked as artists. We would talk about the framework of what we're doing, and then I've got this great book at home, or I know someone that does this, or just,
have you seen this work?
Yeah, and that, and you know, that's the only way I know how to work. And I do believe, you know, it is a cultural thing as well. That's how we are taught up to, you know, to look after each other and help each other out. And
Sydney people, I think, have this mistaken idea that pie is only so big, and I think that's a problem. I like to think of an ever expanding pie. Mm. Like the more people there are building the pie, the bigger the pie gets. Whereas that, and I think you're right, touching on like the expense to live there.
I mean, is that true? I mean, because I said in that question was that I've never seen anything quite like it. Like across Australia, I'd like to think I know the art scene quite well, but I've never seen a collective work together as Proper Now does. And particularly, I mean, I've heard whispers of it in Melbourne here, for example, among the Indigenous arts community. Like, we should form a collective, not unlike Proper Now, and, you know, support each other and stuff, but it's never actually gotten up. Do you think you are unique being Proper Now?
Well, we do work, you know, we do work very hard, and one of our biggest criticisms is that we are an elitist group, which we do not...
Is that prescribed or is that...
Absolutely. We don't make any excuses for that.
Yep.
That's, you know, the premise of what we do is because we do it to that elite professional level. But what we do say is if you want to have a group like Proper Now, we will give you everything we have ever done in terms of the framework for setting it up. We will even help you do it, but we actually don't take on members, or, you know, you can't kind of go, oh, I'd like to be a member of Proper Now. Like, I'm
ready for my close-up.
You know, we've had people come and go over the years, but we, you know, maintain a very close-knit group. But our encouragement is for other people to set up their own collectives and support each other, and we will support you through that collective as well. Like, I'd love to see. Unfortunately, I haven't seen it happen yet, but you know, this is 10 years we're talking about, but we want to see that. We want to, you know, similar to the State of Origin, you know, let's do some art things. And
AFL country. What is this?
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
I'm State of Origin arts. Yes.
A league boy, but let's, you know, let's open up this dialogue and, you know, we can have, you know, shows together and battle each other, but I mean, wouldn't it be fantastic?
So cool.
And I think there's a need, you know, people do reference Proper Now quite a lot as a group and what we've done. And that's the power you have through a group that, you know, you can push each other, you can push the agenda, you can push institutions. And it's, you know, at the end of the day, making the difference between doing it alone and crying or doing it with someone else and having and having a laugh.
Having a shoulder than crying.
You know, would challenge you so much. You end up finding, you know, the fun side of it. Yeah.
And it sounds like they really sort of fast-tracked you.
Majorly. You know, if anything, maybe too fast. I sometimes try to slow things down or become more contemplative of things or take time with things. There's no rush with an art. I think the worst thing you can do is kind of do something for the sake of just quickly doing it. I tend to sit on work a lot longer now and think about it a lot more.
You've done some amazing, I guess, I'm thinking of your House of Cards stuff that you did in South Australia. Can you tell our listeners about that particular installation?
And sure, so that's what part of the Adelaide Biennale at the moment, and there's a work in that, the work I have in the show is called 108, which was a commission from a patron of mine overseas, and 108 is a very interesting number in Eastern philosophy. It's the number of beads on a mandala. It breaks down to the simplest elements of life. So what he did was got a whole range of artists to respond to this theme 108, and within one, I ended up coming up with these groupings. So for each grouping, I actually did a card tower there, and they're 108 centimeters tall. The tower, so similar to what you make as a kid, and you.
Wow.
It's very smoke and mirrors. They actually, you know, they're not going to fall over, but they have a fragility about them, an element of chance within the idea of cards. And I think I really like that in terms of the Australian landscape and this idea that we're going through at the moment, from cyclones and immense wet weather in one area to dry bushfires in the other side of the country. So there's a fragility with our landscape, which I love with the idea of the card towers as well, that, you know, at any moment something could happen.
Knock it over.
And fall down. You know, and the cards themselves come from, they're all kind of vintage cards that I've collected a lot with Aboriginal images on them, which, again, I have a big love of anything that has Aboriginal iconography attached to it. Yeah.
So does Brian. Have you guys shared collections at all? Because I think you both enjoy each other's collections.
I've had snippets of Tony's collection on via Facebook, and I'm just like, yeah, there's a parallel.
Anyway, look, I guess, you know, in talking about the actual art that you do, you know, in visual terms, although perhaps, as you've said, you don't entirely consciously, let's say, do like make your, you know, sexuality part of the imagery, nevertheless, there are, you know, male figures there is a sort of a homoeroticism there in a way, but interestingly, it's very much a sort of a political thing, or am I reading it right? Is that there?
Definitely, but I choose to look at it more as the idea of the exotic other rather than in terms of a homoerotic sense. And and it's not only with male, it's with the female imagery as well. There's a piece in the National Gallery of Australia collection called Ash on Me, which is built up solely of ashtrays with Aboriginal imagery on them. And in a very early work, I had the ashtray in it, but I kept putting it in, but then taking it out, because there was something in my mind where it was, the ashtray is almost like the most sinister of objects or trinkets or souvenirs. The idea to physically ash out on someone's face is
or even on their genitals. I've seen ashtrays with that sort of might have some a woman's genitals be the ash recipient.
Well, funnily, the second to Aboriginal people, the most popular imagery on an ashtray is that of a female. Yeah. So, you know, again, it's that denigration and I think it's more an exoticization of imagery rather than
eroticization.
But that is some of the early comics. It's you know, it's a very Western female body, but then they've placed these Aboriginal heads on it. So, it's exotic. It is, to some extent, most definitely erotic as well. And the idea of the portrayal of Aboriginal people, whether it's whether they want them to be the noble savage or the weak, needy child with big eyes, caricatures. It's, depending on the gaze or that purpose that the image was drawn for, how masculine the image becomes. So it is there. Sometimes it's not necessarily in my mind when doing it, but those things are always there. Yeah. So I think it's, totally correct.
You're with Lefty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9. It's Brian and Kathy are chatting to Tony Albert about his artwork, about perceptions of it, about the intent he has behind it. We'll be back.
Hello there, funny lady Judith Lucy, and of course you're listening to Joy 94.9. Well, you'd be just plain f***ed in the head if you listened to anything else.
Ah, here we are. You're with Lefty Pinkos, Kath and Brian here, and tonight we have artist, a very successful artist actually, Tony Albert with us. Now, Tony, I note that with your artwork, when it's on display, your preference is to have your name there. And, you know, some people choose to have things like where they're from or their language group and so forth, but you choose not to. And I guess I'm kind of wondering where that comes from, because I know there is the pressure on some Aboriginal people, you know, if their group is there, to represent that entire group. Is that why, or are there other reasons?
I guess the first thing I think of when with a question like that is we actually don't get that choice. That is actually how the work, that's the way in which the institutions work. And not only do they work in that way, they have dedicated spaces just for Aboriginal art, and say for in Sydney at the Art Gallery of New South Wales, the Urbana section, which is actually like in the basement of the gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And what we use as terminology within the way we speak to each other as blackfellas is that it's called Darkie's Corner. It's the dedicated space within a gallery.
In the bowels of the institution.
Yeah, and been having the privilege to travel worldwide, this is replicates in other countries and different groups of people as well. There's this idea that, well, you've got your space, be happy. But, mm-hmm. It's actually, it continues to ghettoise and marginalise us. And for a long time, I've certainly believed that, Aboriginal art has to be pulled up out of the basement and actually be at the forefront of gallery spaces. You know, visitors actually want to see what, the First Nation people of this country are doing. I'm not opposed to having dedicated spaces, but I think normal curated shows need the inclusion of the Indigenous voice with them. And I often wonder how a curator can do a show under any premise without that voice being included in it. So it there needs to be less of a divide, I see. And, if people want, to put that name or title next to their own name, then more power to you. But for me personally, I like my art to be looked at in the realm that I'm taking ownership of it, and I'm not forcing other people to have to sit alongside it just because we share the same language group or the same country. Particularly when I'm talking about issues potent to here and now within my life, not a prescribed idea of who I should be as an Aboriginal person. So yeah, that's kind of the reasoning for me to do that. But I've changed my mind over many years that when I was, a youngster, I was very passionately, I'm an Aboriginal artist. If I bake a cake, it's an Aboriginal cake.
Yes.
Because I was really proud of that. But I tend to think sometimes that kind of thinking can disadvantage us and pull us away from a platform where we sit equal to other artists. And
I'm thinking of the work that you presented at the Cairns Indigenous Art Fair a couple of years back, and it was Be Deadly, and it was a series of art pieces that had a lot of, Aboriginal kids and these, almost like posters, I guess. And you teased out that dichotomy between an Indigenous audience or a non-Indigenous audience, but you straddled that dichotomy with price. Can you tell us about that and how it why you wanted to do that, and what was the response to, I guess, those different price points?
The Cairns Art Fair wasn't the right forum for my work, but I'm from North Queensland. I love that community vibe. I love seeing my family. So I went, well, what can I do to make this project accessible? And posters came to my mind. You know, we've got a great history before new technology, that posters were the way we spread
politics, news,
health, education through our communities. So I made a poster that was basically just about being deadly, you know, feeling good about yourself. You could hang it in your room, these smiling kids on it, just make you, you know, smile. But the conceptual development of the work itself, that it was one price for Aboriginal people and one price for everyone else. So the idea was that equality exists through the acceptance of difference, not through things being exactly the same.
Yep.
And an easy way of explaining that is, if I had a dollar to split between us two, that 50 cents each is a very easy answer. But actually, what does my social, does my socioeconomic income make a difference to that? Does my ethnicity make a difference to that? Whether I'm a man or a woman, does that change that price? If you have a disability, does that change that price? So it just starts to think about all these things. There's no right or wrong answer within it. And people could still at the end of the day say, well, no, it's a 50-50 split is fair. But I just open up that dialogue more. And it was something that actually people understood really great. I was hoping for a little more controversy, or, you know, a little more
Brandestar kind of, we need free speech or equality in that sense.
Everyone just kind of, and especially children got it, you know, they were the, you know, I just think children are such amazing thinkers because they're so open, that they're had their head beat in about how they need to think. But adults were, you know, not only non-Indigenous people paying the amount, we're often giving more money, saying, oh, that's, you know, at the end of the day, 100% of the money went to charity, so it didn't really matter what you paid, but it was that idea of, you know,
equity or equality across the price points. Yeah, and I just think it's fascinating.
Yeah, that's a really interesting example. Actually, on that point, I was just sort of, and you have brought up disability, and I work in disability arts, and within the area you get, you know, people who are artists who like to draw on all sorts of influences, and you get other people within disability arts who prefer to draw on the works of other disabled and or deaf people. And I was just wondering, like, within your context, who and what influences your artwork? What artwork out there do you enjoy or get, you know, nourishment from?
Very early on, it sounds sometimes cliche, but it was people like Tracy Moffat and Gordon Bennett. I first came across Tracy's work. I was in high school, you know, coming to terms with, you know, more politically who I was and where I sit within the framework of society. And that Something More work, you know, by Tracy Moffat just made me cry. You know, I felt my understanding of art was that it was a pretty picture. And here was this work that it was like I made it, that was in direct response to my life. So it made me realize what the power art had, and that was something that was, you know, I have never got rid of that. It's a constant in my mind. But I look internationally. I love artists like Yayo Kusama from Japan.
What sort of style is that?
She is very installation based. She does like infinity room, so you see forever. She talks a lot about a eye can disability she has, so it's a lot in netting and veils and a way in which she sees the world. I tend to be drawn to art by either women or minority groups. I think particularly within Australia, that work excites me a lot because we actually those people have something to say. We're in a really weird environment at the moment that's tend to be getting more and more conservative. So what happens in those circumstances is artists tend to be making some of the greatest work ever because they're challenging those positions. So contemporary American art I love. I'm a huge fan of minimalism, and the idea of, you know, the meaning behind a stroke rather than its physical appearance. So Yeah, I love all kinds. You know, I'm a real art nerd. Yeah.
I think you're being a bit harsh, though, when you sort of say cliched Tracy Moffat, because I'm just thinking in now at the moment when we're discussing the Racial Discrimination Act, I saw a picture in, I think it was The Guardian, of Penny Wong, one of our parliamentarians, standing in front of a piece by Tracy Moffat. It's from that Something More series. And I was struck. I mean, I read the words. I was like, yeah, fine, whatever. But I was struck by the fact that Tracy Moffat's work from, I guess it's 15 or so years ago, still transcends and is made relevant in contemporary conservative Australia. Penny Wong, one of our parliamentarians, is standing in front of it as if to say, everything in this artwork is conveyed in, you know, what I think at the moment. Like, you've got these Indigenous people, you've got these elements of migration, and you've got these non-Indigenous white people basically sitting, you know, lapping it up effectively, and it just struck me as this, like, Tracy Moffat, she transcends. So I don't want you kind of saying, hey, she's cliche, because I think she is somebody that does, you know, she sits there and she rightfully sits there because her work is just rich to the point and says so much, you know, in a beautiful, sumptuous, constructed image.
She breaks all the rules, and you know, she is Aboriginal and she's female and she's the most successful Australian artist. I mean, that's something to be so proud of.
Totally a pioneer.
You're with Lefty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9. We're going to have to wrap things up soonish, but we've got Tony Elwood in the studio with us. We'll be with him for another 5 or so minutes. We'll be back.
Hi, I'm Kylie Minogue, also known as Kylie from Camberwell, and I'm a proud Joy member, number 285.
You're with Lefty Pinkos, Kath and Brian in the hot seats tonight, with our artist friend, installation artist, visual artist, Tony Elwood. Now, Tony, I've read your CV and I was so impressed I could hardly even look at you. But I guess just looking at all the different things that you've done, I guess I'd like to ask you, you know, for, you know, a lot of artists don't survive doing art. Could you perhaps share a few tips for, you know, up and comings, like emerging artists out there?
Sure. The thing is, it's really hard. And, you know, a lot of artists don't survive purely because of that reason. It's you know, I remember back in the days where I was working full-time, I would finish work, go to the studio at about 6 in the evening and work through to midnight, and I did that for about 3 or 4 years to build up enough of a body of work to be able to then present it. So it's just, I think there is a romanticized idea about art and the art world, and the truth is I don't know any other profession where you really have to work as hard as you do. So for people to take that on board and know that, you know, I don't wait for opportunities to come to me. I create my own opportunities. I don't wait for someone to say, well, I'm creating a show on this, can you make something? I go, well, I'll do the show. Like, I plan these fake events, so I'm making work for something that doesn't even exist, but
wow.
I'm doing it. Like, I'm working every day. You know, when I was lecturing, the first week I always said, I want you this week to find out every commercial gallery where you're living and be on their mailing list. You have to know what other artists are doing, and you have to know where your work sits in the art world and in the forum. You're creating a dialogue through your art, and you can only do that by knowing and understanding what other artists are doing. And, you know, what young people don't know also is, you know, you get drinks at these events and stuff. You know, for 5 years, I was drunk and didn't spend a cent. So this is, you know, it's an untapped source
of inspiration.
Entertainment that, you know, and you'll meet artists through that. You'll meet older, educated art lovers, academics. You will have great conversations. And I love where we're at in history, that we don't have to yell and scream at each other now to get points across. We can actually talk about them in a sophisticated dialogue. And the art world is one of those rare areas where I think it's more common. You all sit within that niche that, you know, it doesn't matter if you're gay or transgender or have an outsider, out-of-the-box way of thinking about the world. That tends to be the art world in itself. So I find it very comforting world to sit within, and I enjoy going out with like-minded, art-orientated people, and I enjoy conversing with people I don't know who are art lovers, because we create and have this amazing dialogue. So that's what I want to see young people do. I hate it when, you know, it's a third year student that doesn't even know what commercial galleries are around. I think that's really, really important. And you've got to support the industry that you're within as well. And, mm-hmm. you know, just by turning up, you're support, you know, you're showing your face. And that's a great thing when I have shows that people turn up to see them. I'm fortunate enough, you know, when you're with a commercial gallery, there is media and support and admin to get that voice out there. But for smaller galleries or more emerging artists, it's nice when people come along to see your work. And I think it's important to be that person that comes along, not just be the person that's hanging on the, you know, you're not just having your artwork hanging, you're a supporter of the arts.
Tony, despite your youthful looks, you are, I guess, beyond. He's very youthful looking. If you could see him now, he's like Peter Pan-ish. You're very youthful, but, I mean, you probably don't fit in the realm of emerging artists. But who out there do you have your eye on, or who do you like, or who's emerging out there on the landscape in Australia?
Mm.
And maybe an Indigenous artist that yeah. you like, or like the work of? Or
well, I've just had the pleasure of curating a show, and that was for a third-year student in Brisbane called Dale Harding. Mm-hmm. He is an Aboriginal man, but he looks a lot at sexuality and sensitivities within that. And I think he... for me, he takes, I guess, conceptual minimalism to a brand new level, and it really excited me. And when I saw his work, you know, I asked him, "I'll come to the studio and help me out at the studio." And I just wanted to get to know him and to support his practice and hopefully not make some of the mistakes that I made. You know, that's always something I think of in, if, you know, if I've done it, I've done it the hard way. So that's another area where I like to try to help people, at least give them better tools or teach them from a life experience. But he really inspires me, and I always tell him, you know, I've got to be nice to him, because one day I'll probably be working for him. You know, he's
tell us about his work, like Dale's work. Is it describe it?
He does these silent memorial homages to people. So his Nena was a domestic servant taken from her family at a very young age, and they used to wear these Hessian bags, and you would get very coarse, they were very coarse, and you'd get very bad rashes across your body. And he recreated these Hessian dresses that the girls wore, and he found this Angora mohair, the most beautiful, softest wool he could find, and actually
lined it with
off the Hessian sacks as this kind of memorial, or this way of giving a
healing the past,
thinking, healing and a tribute to his grandmother, in saying that if only I could have. I mean, sorry, I feel like crying.
I'm touched now.
We're all going there.
They're silent memorials, and I think it's something that I've seen other people do, but never as good as that.
Mm-hmm.
For a sophistication, for such a young, you know, someone very emerging, just took my breath away. So that's... but I'm constantly, you know, looking at younger artists, at what they're doing, and, you know, they're as much inspiration than established, you know, mid or long career artists. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, this has been an amazing Lefty Pinko.
Yeah.
We're going to have to wrap things up. But before we go, Tony, what's up next? Or, you know, we're based in Melbourne here. What's going on for you that people could get along to check out?
Well, I'll actually be back in late July for the Basil Sellers Art Prize at the Ian Potter Museum, which I'm very excited about. It's one of the biggest art prizes in Australia, the intersection between art and sport. And I've been looking at the Adam Goods incident and racism in sport. So it's quite confronting and challenging, but something that is really exciting me at the moment.
Beautiful. Well, make sure you get along to check that out late July at the Ian Potter Centre at the NGV. But thanks for tuning in. We're going to have to hand things over to Transpositions now. You've been listening to Joy 94.9 Lefty Pinkos with Kath and Brian.
Uh-huh.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.